there. Welcome to the Real World NP Podcast. I'm Liz Rohr, family nurse practitioner, educator, and founder of Real World NP, an educational company for nurse practitioners in primary care. I'm on a mission to equip and guide new nurse practitioners so that they can feel confident, capable, and take the best care of their patients. If you're looking for clinical pearls and practice tips without the fluff, you're in the right place. Make sure you subscribe and leave a review so you won't miss an episode. Plus, you'll find links to all the episodes with extra goodies over at realworldnp.com/podcast. One of the things I'm really passionate about with Real World NP is this transition to practice that takes place. So when we leave grad school, it takes about 3 years for us to feel really competent and confident. And I want to do my absolute best with this company to make sure we do what we can to support new nurse practitioners on that journey. Because what unfortunately I see happen and nearly happened to me is that I got burnt out shortly after I reached that point of like, oh, I actually know what I'm doing. And I almost left being a nurse practitioner. I almost left the profession. And I see that unfortunately more often than honestly it should for everyone's benefit, right? It's just really heartbreaking. And one of the pieces, it's not just about clinical knowledge, which I think is a really common misconception for new nurse practitioners. And that's the primary focus, right? Because we're seeing patients in front of us. We need to know what we're doing, right? We need to be clinically competent. But one of the sneaky parts that leads to that stress, overwhelm, and burnout is this these other aspects of this role transition and other parts of our lives. So this guest that I'm bringing on the podcast today, I'm speaking specifically about financial planning, financial aspects of the role transition to becoming a nurse practitioner, questions that people bring to me, things like, how do I deal with student loan debt? What should I do with my 401k? There's like a matching thing. Should I do that? Like, what are some of the pieces that you have for guidance on that? So I'm not a financial advisor. And so who I'm bringing on is Lauren Williams. And we're going to be talking about in this interview, a number of those questions and just some foundational information that I think will be really helpful for you, especially if this is your first job, if you went straight through undergrad to grad school, or if this is your first time working in this kind of setting with those types of benefits, or the first time having student loan debt. I think you'll really appreciate it. I feel like it's information that I've kind of learned the hard way a little bit through experience over time. So I'm really, really thrilled to bring Lauren on because she's so passionate, having gone through some trials herself, financial tribulations, which you'll hear about in a second. She's really passionate about making sure that professionals have the tools that they need to set themselves up for success financially, which I honestly is a huge contributor. What I hear anecdotally, at least, is a huge stressor for people when it comes to that added piece of the role transition and a new job and a new workplace and a new type of work that you're doing. So I'm going to read you Lauren's bio before I get into our interview, just so you get to know her a little more. She'll share also from her perspective. Some informal shares, but here's the bio here. So Lauren Williams is a certified financial planner, CFP. She's a 4-time Olympian, 3-time Olympic medalist, and the first American woman to earn a medal in both the Summer and Winter Olympic Games. While pursuing professional sports, Lauren interacted with not one, but 2 financial advisors that didn't provide the services that she needed. She asked friends what they were doing about their finances, and the answers were vague and unsettling. Constantly looking for ways to make a difference in the lives of others, she decided to put her finance degree and MBA to use to fill the gap for young professionals. Eager to learn everything, she then pursued the Certified Financial Planning Certification. Her company, Worth Winning, offers virtual services to help young professionals get the answers to the financial questions that matter most to them, whether that is creating a budget, figuring out a plan to pay off student loans, setting goals for savings, or understanding your 401k, Worth Winning is ready to help with all things personal finance. And one thing that's really important to me is accessibility. And so I really just wanted to share the information that we, as much as we could share, for you to be able to do what you can with the tools that you have, as well as share some resources of where you can learn more, where you can get more support, things like that. So I loved this interview. I hope you enjoy it too. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited. So there's an intro before this, talking about your bio, but Maybe just off the cuff, do you want to say a little bit about yourself to share yourself with the people who are listening?
Yeah, so a little bit more about me above and beyond the very professional, put together, quick bio hits is I got into the financial industry because at age 20, I became a professional athlete. I didn't have goals or aspirations my whole life of becoming one, kind of fell into my lap. I was a junior in college. I ran the second fastest time in the world. It immediately turned my focus from, being a college kid and having a good time and enjoying being on scholarship to, hey, you're the fastest person in America. We're counting on you for the 2004 Olympic Games. Can you show up and make it happen?
Oh my God,
a lot happened really, really quick for me. And I ended up with like a $200,000 salary as a 20-year-old, which is, pretty big deal, especially this is back in, like I said, 2004. I am old. It is a thing. I'm okay with it. And I come from a family that didn't have a lot of financial literacy. So I knew enough to know as a junior in college of a finance major that I didn't know anything and that I needed to enlist the help of someone else. What I also didn't know at that time was that there are different types of financial professionals out there. I happen to be a certified financial planner that is fee only and fiduciary. And we can talk a little bit more about like what all those different parts are. And I ended up in the hands of a commission-based person, was basically very sales oriented and didn't have a lot of knowledge or expertise above and beyond that. So it was a pretty tough situation because I was financially illiterate and looking for literacy. And I didn't really get that with the first financial advisor that I had. I did fire him, hire another guy, thought that that was going to go better because this guy worked specifically with professional athletes and it didn't go better. In fact, the company that he worked for ended up shutting down because they invested a bunch of NFL players' money in a casino. The casino never opened and they all lost 100% of their money.
Oh my gosh.
So I was lucky. Wow. I didn't earn millions of dollars, so I didn't get to invest in a casino. But I was not well cared for at that place. So,
yeah.
So how I got here is basically I got angry and fed up and was like, what do people do when they want to organize their finances? They're willing to pay for help, but they can't seem to find it anywhere. And a Google search led me down the coursework for certified financial planning. It felt like it resonated better than all the other things that I had researched along the way. And I just like blindly dived into it. Like, okay, let's figure out if this is a thing for me. And I wasn't thinking as a profession. It was just like, let me figure out if this can help me figure out my finances because I feel lost and I don't want to mess this up. I realize I have a good earning opportunity is much better than the average 20-something-year-old. So I did that, did some internships, and basically started my own firm because I wanted to be able to help young professionals, similar situations as me, people who are willing to pay for advice, but don't come from a background where financial planning is, their mom and their dad didn't have a financial advisor, if you will, figure out their financial stuff. And it's not just investing. It's all the pieces of the puzzle related to your finance. So my company is called Worth Winning. It's 6 years old and we help young professionals organize their finances. Hopefully I told the whole life story quickly enough.
Oh, I love that so much. It's just so beautiful. And I'm so sorry you had such a horrible experience early on. It's really tragic when we have these horrible experiences, but how beautiful that you've been able to turn that into like this mission driven forward. Were you studying finances in your college experience already? Like what was your, or did you totally switch paths? I'm sorry, I missed that part.
Yeah, so I was a finance major in college, but back then in my day, there was no financial planning major, and that's different. Mm. So financial planning is the thing that helps you organize your finances. That is a whole major in and of itself now, whereas finance is a very broad. You can go into corporate finance, you can go into, banking, all sorts of different things. It was like all-encompassing finance. And it didn't really cover specifically what to do with someone's personal finance, which there's six pillars, which, I'm sure we might have time to talk about those today. Estate planning, taxes, insurance, budgeting, cash flow, retirement, investments. I don't know if I, yeah. Plus or minus, those are the pillars of
Beautiful.
Financial planning specifically.
Yeah. So we'll definitely come back to those because I think that's really like the main, and before we started recording, I was sharing that, like, I think the main thing that I feel The things that I've heard kind of run the gamut, and whether it's new nurse practitioners who went straight from undergraduate into their graduate degree, this is their first quote unquote real job in their words, where they get to have things like benefits and retirement and stuff like that. And they're like, yeah, I've had people directly ask me in my personal life outside of the company, like, hey, should I sign up for this 401k? Should I be contributing? How much should I be contributing? What should I do about X, Y, and Z? All the way to people who are maybe in their 50s and this is their second or third career, and they might have like a house or children or things like that. So what I would love to have in our conversation is just like really anchored in that place of like, you are such a, you're such like a pillar for people in these positions, because they are relatively high earning W-2 salaried employees who are trying to figure out what to do with their money. So yeah, so I love hearing your story that like you came from this place of like, I've tried and it didn't work out. And now it's like, okay, here's how it goes. But yeah, I guess, so what is, maybe before we get into more specific questions, like what is something that you, what's like, what's the thing that you love the most about what you do?
Ooh, this is a hard one because there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
I would say it's the idea that people feel empowered after it's all said and done. So part of what I do is like 60-minute student loan consultations. And at the end of 60 minutes, people's lives have literally been changed. And I didn't know that that was even a possibility when I started doing this work. You know, financial planning in of itself is very complex. Like I said, there's all these different topics and pillars and things like that. But, you know, this is a very finite one piece of the puzzle that I'm helping people tackle. And, you know, it bleeds over into other parts of your finances. So I'm able to share part of my other pieces of expertise as we're walking through your student loan scenario. But to literally, you know, never know a person, maybe only talk to them this one time for 60 minutes, and to know that I've saved them tens of thousands of dollars. And sometimes they literally tell me, like, you've changed my life. Like, this had me slip up at night. You know, there was just so many things that I didn't know, that like the information that I have is valuable enough that it can literally change lives, and I don't have to wait 30 years to do it, or you don't have to show up 27 times or whatever the case may be. Like, I did an Instagram live last night, and it's like, I know that it's going to help somebody just from 45 minutes of me chit-chatting with the information. Like, how powerful the information is what I love most about my job.
I love that. And I love you sharing that, because I think that my finances and money can be so overwhelming for so many people. So the fact that it doesn't have to be overwhelming, and it can be so super impactful, and it doesn't take that much time. I mean, maybe that's an oversimplification, but there's so much that we can do in a short period of time. I guess a first question to start with, speak a little bit to like, what is a certified financial planner, and why would somebody want to hire somebody? There's so many questions I could go into from there, but maybe so let's start with that.
Absolutely. So certified financial planner is kind of the bar we set in the financial industry for, you know, top notch. Like, you wouldn't go to someone like, you and I can both read books on medicine, and I can probably figure out how to patch somebody up by some YouTube videos now, but you probably want to go to a doctor. You want to go to the emergency room. You want somebody who specializes in emergency medicine if you've been shot, right?
Yes.
The CFP is the same version of that. So there are all kinds of different financial professionals, and it's a highly unregulated industry. So you can wake up and call yourself a financial planner, you can call yourself a wealth manager, a wealth advisor, and the list goes on, financial advisor. None of those terms are regulated. The one term that is regulated is certified financial planner. We have to have passed an exam. We have to have a certain amount of experience. So just like a doctor goes to residency, you have to like do a certain amount before you can actually call yourself a practicing MD. Exam, experience, we have to have a certain amount of education. And then the last thing is that we follow a code of ethics as well. And all of those things, you have a certain amount of continuing education that you do ethics on a regular basis in addition to other things. So it really, really does raise the bar for making sure that the person is ingrained in finances and personal finances on a regular basis if they want to hold that certification. You cannot just wake up and call yourself a certified financial planner. I can go look that up and see if you're telling the truth or not. And then I can call you out on it, and they can actually, you know, come after you. So, you know, all those other terms that I mentioned are terms that, like I said, are willy-nilly, and you have to be very careful.
Absolutely. And I love you sharing that because it can be really intimidating when it comes to money if you're just not aware of it. One of the terms you used before is fiduciary. Can you say what a fiduciary is, especially in the context of somebody, if they're like, I know that I need help with my finances, I would like to enlist some support. Where do I go from there?
Yes, absolutely. So fiduciary means that you are legally obligated to do what is in the other person's best interest, which it is mind-blowing to me that we
that
have
has
people
to be
in
regulated.
The financial that we actually have people who are not fiduciary in the financial industry. So it's a really big deal. And like I said, for me, it's all three: fiduciary, CFP, and fee only, which I'm sure that'll be your next follow-up
yeah.
question. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
But
go for it.
Fiduciary is like, hey, you know, I heard everything you said, and this is what I think is best based on the information that you provided. Whereas a non-fiduciary might say, this is what's suitable for you. And you'll frequently find the non-fiduciary with someone who is commission-based. So as an example, they'll say, here's $2 million of life insurance I'd like you to get, Liz, because, you know, you've got a spouse, you got kids, you got whatever going on in your life. Like, you can get this $2 million of insurance and you can pay $20,000 a year for it. It's suitable. Like, if you die, your family will get $2 million. But is it really in your best interest if you just told me you had credit card debt and, you know, you're struggling to pay your mortgage, et cetera, et cetera? A fiduciary is going to say, hey, in light of the information that I've learned about you, go get this $2 million of insurance, or you don't even need $2 million. You need $1.5 million of insurance. And also, you can go get it for $75 over here. If you get it with me, you know, I'm going to get a cut of it, but I want to do what's in your best interest. So here's a place where you can get it actually a little bit cheaper, but you definitely need this insurance. So you can kind of see the difference in, like, you still get to the finish line and you get what you quote unquote need. And it can still be helpful if you kick the bucket, but somebody charged you a lot more and didn't do it because it was in your best interest, but because of what they were going to earn from it. And the other person did what was in your best interest.
Definitely. So somebody, for example, like, could come, like, if you were thinking about working with somebody and it was like your local bank or maybe a chain bank, and they had some sort of financial planner that was there that wasn't a CFP specifically, was not a fiduciary, they could be like, oh, okay, you should definitely invest this thing, and then not necessarily I don't know what the disclosure rules are, but they could be making money off of their recommendations as their priority first, versus if you're CFP fiduciary, that's like very clear, easy language to just hold on to if you're new to the financial advisor kind of industry.
Absolutely. And I mean, you bring up a great point too about disclosures. Like, that's another thing when you're interviewing a financial professional is, how do you make money? Because the ones that make it seem like don't worry, I'll just take care of it all for you. You're like, wait, like, how do you pay your bills if it's free?
You know? That's sketchy.
That's kind of super sketch. So making sure that you ask them, because they do need to disclose at the point at which you ask, but sometimes they don't have to disclose because you didn't ask anything and you feel like it's free, but it's actually not. There's a lot of underlying fees with the investments or things that they're putting you into.
Totally. And it sounds like, at least this is my experience, is that when I've, if you're looking for somebody, it's helpful to have a fee only, meaning like you just pay, like it's a certified financial planner who is a fiduciary. And then you have a very clear payment system of like, oh, I pay you X amount either per month or per year to help you with this kind of package deal of how I'm going to help you with your finances. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely accurate. It's a great summary of fee only. Is like, there is disclosure. There has to be disclosure. You clearly understand what you're paying. There's all types of different fee structures, but that disclosure piece of the puzzle is like, hey, I charge 1% of the investment assets that you have. So you got $1 million, I charge 1%. It's a $10,000 fee. I charge it annually. Like, very clear. You understand what is being charged. There should be nothing else being charged besides that. Or I charge a monthly fee of $500 a month. Okay, $500 a month times 12, $6,000 a year. That is my fee. But there's no, like I said, hidden cost related to it whatsoever. And you can decide, like you said, if that's a fee that you feel is appropriate or not. And you can also negotiate as well.
Awesome. So that's just the primer on like what kind of guidance you have and around like the hiring some help with the finances for the people who are kind of like, I'm not sure I'm quite ready to get some financial help, but I'm trying to figure out some pieces to the puzzle. Your specialty is working with, like I said, salary earners, W-2 earners, meaning like you're not self-employed, who are making around $100,000 or more per year, which is around where a lot of nurse practitioners make their income. if somebody's in that place and they're kind of dropped in and they're not really aware of like what the different things, they're just like, I have all this money. I have student loans. What do I do about retirement? Like, what guidance do you have to that very kind of like initial point of like, I just got this job. I was really overwhelmed to get this job and I'm so happy I have it. And now I have some money things to deal with. What would you kind of say from there to start?
Well, we first have to make a little financial checklist. So I would say the most foundational thing to understand is like what is going to be coming in on a monthly basis. So, you know, the big bad B word is budget. You can call it what you want to call it. I like to call it a spending plan. But if you don't understand like what's coming in, you're not going to have a full understanding of what's going out. And so, like you said, for a W-2 employee, you might make, let's say, $120,000 a year. That's $10,000 a month. We can do that easy math. But we got to pay all this taxes. All this other stuff's going to come out of your paycheck. They're going to deduct some things that you might have opted into or just automatically. And then you're going to come back and you might get like $7,000 a month once it's all said and done. So looking at your pay stub and understanding like what is coming in and what is going out, you know, before I even get to what ends up in my pocket is important because you might need to change that. So from a tax perspective, you might be withholding too much or too little. They might already automatically take, let's say, 3% out of your paycheck for your 401k. So maybe something's going into retirement, but your baseline first thing that you want to do is understand what am I earning and what's being subtracted from what I'm earning before I get started. And then let's go from there and say, what are the things that I need to tackle? So to your point, do I need to tackle debt? That's definitely at the top of the priority list, understanding what your plan is for that debt. When do I want to retire by? That's a question you got to ask pretty early on. Like if you're at the beginning of your career, you're like, I'm going to live forever. YOLO.
Oh, definitely. Hashtag mistakes I've made. Yes. Go ahead.
Right. 100%. We all have, because you're just like, hey, retire what? I'm healthy. I'm young. I'm making all this money. But you have to ask yourself this question. Like, what does it look like to be done? What does it look like for me to not be able to work anymore? If you have parents or, you know, older people, grandparents in your life, you know, what did it look like for them to retire? Are they still working and they're 70 and they get up, go every day and they're miserable? You know, what do you want for yourself can be shaped off of those things. Or they retired at 55 and they were super bored and now they're back at work because they had nothing to do. Start thinking about, or maybe your family has a lot of ailments and everybody dies at 65. Like, so you might want to govern yourself accordingly based on those things, but you absolutely have to ask that question so you can start to work backwards into what should I be saving for retirement? So it's a money mindset thing that needs to happen in addition to let me get a clear baseline understanding of what's coming in. Let me understand like what my big, you know, debts are that I might need to take care of. And then let me look at some of these other financial pillars.
Awesome. Awesome. That's super helpful. And I really love how you're I think so often when it comes to money things, especially because there's a lot of fear in there, it's hard to have that bigger perspective and vision of like, oh, okay, what do I actually want my life? Well, it's tough, right? Because it's like, how do I actually want my life to be like currently? Where do I want to retire? Where do I want this to go? And then also with the grappling with like, okay, maybe I am living paycheck to paycheck right now, even though I might have a higher salary than I had before, or maybe I chose to take a pay cut because I wanted to have this first nurse practitioner job compared to my nursing job, which was like making a lot more money. But regardless of where we're at, I think it's so helpful to have that vision, because how are we going to know where we're going? Right. Unless we have that kind of perspective, regardless of what our current situation is.
Yes. You just hit on like 10 great points. So you said you can't know where you're going if you don't just ask yourself, where do you want to go? Like setting goals is so important. Otherwise, you get stuck on the hamster wheel of just like, hey, this is what's happening in life. This is what I got to do. And I'm just going to keep doing whatever, like pay bills, work, repeat. And so that paycheck to paycheck mindset, that's where so many people live because they didn't ever do this foundational or even hit the pause button and just say like, hold on a second. Yeah. What do I want for my life? And they, you know, went and got a mortgage. They went and got a really high rent, a car note, because it's like, okay, I'm a grown up. We need houses. We need cars. We need, you know, X, Y, Z. Yeah. The best thing you can do if you're new is say, hey, what do I want for my life? When do I want to be done? How much do I want to save? So we always use the term pay yourself first. put mm-hmm. that aside and then build a lifestyle off of what's left over. So in my example earlier, I said 10K was the 120 salary. You bring home seven, you know, maybe you need to save $2,000 of that a month. Like you put that aside and now you're building your lifestyle. I got 5K to live off of. Mm-hmm. That means my mortgage needs to be, or my rent needs to be 1500 and this needs to be X and this needs to be X because it's just not optional for me to not save that 2000. So mm-hmm. now you've built a life that's very affordable for you based on a lower earning, quote unquote, but it's actually the earning that you need to be able to save to do what you want versus the reverse. What everybody does is like you say, get all the things and try to save what's left over. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest thing to get yourself out of once you've gotten into it. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's just so many places I feel like we could go in terms of like next topics. Cause like on the one hand, yeah. Like, so so far what we talked about is like, there's the top line, basically money that you take home, money that you're earning, looking at your actual checks of like what the whole take home is, what is your vision and your plan for that? And then can we look at our debts and then come up with a plan for that? I guess pausing on that, because that could be such a big topic in and of itself, is talking about how to manage student loan debt, but maybe like, are there other things we could, I guess we could focus on that because a lot of people had questions about student loans versus are there some things that you want to touch on in terms of like the other aspects of like a financial strategy? And I guess pause real quick on that is like one of the things that I've really learned because I work with a financial CFP, who you know, and I feel like I've learned so much about there's so much more involved in terms of like financial health than I realized. So I guess I'm debating what are your thoughts, especially working with the people that are listening to this. What do you think? Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, I think student loan debt is a great place to kind of start because like I said, we talk about tackling debt. We talk about increasing net worth. That's a big term that's being thrown out. And it's like, how can I increase, you know, if I have $100,000 a year coming in and I have all the money basically going right back out the door, how am I ever going to have a net worth that's a positive number?
Yeah.
And how am I ever going to pay these student loans off? Because they're $200,000-$300,000 sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my quick spiel on student loans is like your strategy needs to be either you get very aggressive and you get them off your plate, or you get on a very passive route and you go for forgiveness. So a lot of people immediately ears are going up like forgiveness. I've been fielding these questions for the last couple of weeks because there's been so many things that have happened related to COVID. A lot of people view the word forgiveness as like immediately somebody waves a wand and your loans disappear. And that can happen, and it is happening for a few people, but that's not what's happening for the vast majority. But the word forgiveness is still relevant. In the sense that what happens is you either pay on your loans for 10, 20, or 25 years, depending on your particular situation. And whatever is left over after that time frame is what is forgiven. And the result of that is that you actually pay a portion of what you borrowed. So let me just like give you a numerical example so that you can like better understand. And this is going to be relevant for those people who earn less than they owe. So let me like say that $150,000 owed and you earn $50,000 a year, you owe three times what you actually earn.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really hard for you to pay that debt off in my example.
Yep.
So what do? You can do the 10-year forgiveness, which is public service loan forgiveness, which a lot of MPs will be qualified for because a lot of health organizations are 501c3s or government agencies. And so we can talk a little bit more about public service if you want to, but the main piece of the puzzle is that you pay on the loans over 10 years, whatever is left over is forgiven. So in my example, somebody who has 50K of income coming in might have a $75 a month payment. Mm-hmm. And so they pay $75 a month for 10 years. And whatever is left over that $150,000 balance is completely forgiven. Mm-hmm. Well, quick math tells us $75 a month is nowhere near $150,000 over the course of 10 years. So that's why there's something left over to be forgiven. They're assigning you a payment based on your income that's going to be affordable for you on a monthly basis, but it's not going to cover what you need to be paying to pay it off in a reasonable time frame. So that's public service for 10 years. You have the 20-year or the 25 years. The 20-year could be depending on when you borrowed. It could also be based on whether or not you have graduate debt or not. If it's only undergrad debt, it's a 20-year time frame. And then everybody else is 25 years. The big difference with the 20 and 25-year forgiveness is that at the end of that time frame, it is presumed to be taxable. So they're going to still forgive your loans after paying for that period of time. Public service loan forgiveness, you walk away scot-free. The 20 or 25 year forgiveness, you pay a tax liability related to that. So you need to be setting a little bit of money aside so that you can write the IRS a check in 20 or 25 years. But generally, that number still ends up being way lower than your student loan balance. So let's just say it was $10,000 that you paid in the first situation because it was only 10 years. You know, we're not going to do all the fancy math right now. 20 years is going to take you longer. $20,000 that you pay on this $150,000 of debt, which means, you know, a bunch is still being forgiven, at least $130,000 and probably plus interest even more. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I only paid 20 grand. And then it's like, oh, I also have to pay this tax liability. Let's say the tax liability is 30,000. So in totality, you paid 50 grand on $150,000 of debt. Still a pretty good deal.
I see. Totally. Totally. Yeah, that's really, I'm trying to think about the people. And like, so somebody say they're in a situation, they have graduate debt, undergrad and graduate debt, and then they've taken their first job at like a federally qualified health center, which is a, you know, a grant funded, typically, well, combination, but can qualify, it sounds like, for the first one that you're talking about, that public service grant, like, or loan. Like, if somebody's in that situation and they're like, oh my gosh, I would love to have help with this, is this something that people pursue on their own? Is this something that usually is facilitated by a certified financial planner? Like, if somebody's interested in figuring out more about these options, where would they go from here?
You've got a lot of different options. So if your debt is your main thing, you can book a one-time consultation to just figure out your debt if you don't feel like you're ready to work on a long-term basis with a financial planner. There's tons of places. So I do them. There's a company called Student Loan Planner, where, like I said, I've trained, I think like 25 people over the last like 6 months or so. So I'm very, very familiar with everybody there, and they can help you. You can go on a website. Student Loan Planner's website is actually the one I would still recommend to like figure it out yourself, DIY it. There are some financial coaches that can help with this. It's just a matter of like, one, how much are you willing to spend? Mm-hmm. And when I say spend, it's either money or time. Yeah. You can invest the time and figure this out yourself. Studentaid.gov is where you would go if you want to just like research it and get it directly from the source, where you can learn all the rules and things. Like I said, place like Student Loan Planner is going to have a lot of blogs. They're going to have podcasts that are going to talk about it. Or you can just be like, hey, I'm a professional at what I do. There are professionals that know this thing, yep. And I'm going to book a consultation. Generally, it's going to be 60 minutes, and they'll help me figure out this student loan thing. It's well worth the investment of money to save myself the time and to make sure I'm getting the information from someone who eats, sleeps, and breathes this all day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess in terms of, I love keeping things really practical in terms of if somebody's in that situation of like, I'm so overwhelmed with this, I don't have time, energy to pursue all of that DIY stuff. Do you have a recommendation of like, okay, so I'm interested in a CFP, who's a fiduciary, who's going to be able to help me with my student loan plan? Like, what should they kind of expect in terms of monthly fees or once a year? Or is it really like, do you have any insights in that? It just seems like, at least to me as a consumer as well, like it's hard to know what the options are. And I've gone through recommendations basically what to find my team and all my people. But yeah, what thoughts do you have?
Yeah, it is not black and white. It's a very gray area. And that's one of the things that was really frustrating for me as I was like getting into this industry and when I was looking for a financial professional for myself. Mm-hmm. It was just like, well, what are these terms? And I, like I said, I got into it and I still didn't get it for probably, I'd say like the first 3 years at least. I was like, I still don't get like which one of these things is the most important, and how do I like describe to a consumer what they should be doing? Because like you said, there are some people that do earn a commission. You know, I didn't speak very highly of that on the front end, but there are some people of high integrity and high intelligence that earn a commission for doing the financial professional stuff. Like you said, and for me in general, it's like, how do I make it easy in layman's terms? It's follow those three things. Like, that's going to eliminate a whole bunch of crap for you and get you a high integrity person. But to your point, like, I think the thing that you need to be thinking about from a pricing standpoint is, where is the complexity in my financial situation, and what kind of investment am I willing to make in myself? So ongoing advice, I think the minimum you will find that for is $3,000 a year. If someone is much cheaper than that, then I would kind of be a little bit leery. And even then it's going to be someone who is probably doing something that is to cater to people of lower incomes or that are beginners and just kind of are worried about sticker shock, or maybe they're a younger entrepreneur and they haven't figured out pricing. So you can get some really good service and they can get you in the door and you'd be one of their beginning clients. But I've seen it, $25,000 as a minimum as well for a lot of advisors. It depends on like what you're earning then in that case, because obviously $25,000 might be 25% of your income.
Afford
that.
Definitely.
And to that point, a good rule of thumb is like 2-3% of your income is where like ongoing fees sometimes end up landing. So, you know, you make $100,000, you pay around $3,000 a year for an ongoing person. But as I mentioned, you can also find someone that does project work. And so for me, my financial planning firm is all about bridging the gap.
Yeah.
I've actually stopped doing ongoing financial planning work altogether because there's tons of people that do that.
Yeah.
And I only do project work. So I am for the person that's like, I'm not really sure if I want this ongoing thing yet. Like, maybe I just want to talk to you one time.
Yeah.
And so I help you in that, in the moment, I point you in the right direction. You can either go off on your own and we never talk again, or you go off on your own and you realize like, whoa, there's a lot more complexity to this. Mm-hmm. Like, Lauren, can you recommend somebody that does this ongoing thing you were talking about? Because I think I need some additional support.
I love that.
Yeah, so wonderful. I'm all about filling the gaps, but there's all kinds of different things that are available. Like I said, from a pricing structure, paying a one-time fee, paying an ongoing fee, paying a percent of assets under management. So a lot of us as young professionals, we don't have assets to manage. Like, some money's in our 401k and we are living paycheck to paycheck otherwise, or you just don't know anything about investing. You're trying to get into that. So you're coming to a professional. So it's like, you can't charge me based on my investment assets when I don't have any.
I don't have anything. Sorry. Well, right. I think that brings a really great place to go. I think so. 401k is such a huge question. So I think 401k and investments, depending on our timing, I think 401k was such a, so there's so many facets of 401k. So I guess I'll take a couple of example situations. So one is that, hey, I work in a federally qualified health center, or I work in a hospital-based clinic and they have a 401k plan set up already, or 403b, I think. No, I don't remember the numbers. Tell me on the numbers. I can't remember the numbers, but 401k versus the other number one. And then there's like a matching program. And should I sign up for that? What is this match thing all about? What should I be saving in that? I know that's a really big question, but like maybe like ease us into that situation.
Yes, it is not too big to tackle. So first of all, you did say it right. It is 401k or 403b.
And what's the difference?
There is also, I was going to say, there's also the 457 plan as well. So all of them are going to allow you to put $22,500 into them on an annual basis, which is, I guess, point number one about these retirement plans. A lot of people, to your point, like, oh, I can do a match of 3%, and everybody's doing the match. So you're like, I'm putting in 3% because my employer's putting in 3%, and that's what I'm doing. Well, 3% might not be enough to get you to retirement. We might need to be doing the whole $22,000 if you're earning really well, $160,000, $170,000 coming in. Like, we should be saving roughly 20% of our income as a benchmark. So if you're not working with a financial professional and you're DIYing your finances, look at that number. I make $200,000. 20% of that is $40,000. Like, that's what you need to be saving on an annual basis if you want to be on track for retirement. And when I say saving into an investment account. Mm-hmm. But to get back to the point, the 401k and the 403b are the same. One is going to be for a nonprofit organization. The other is going to be for all the other organizations. The 457 plan is going to be specific to the nonprofit or the government agencies. And it's going to be an additional $22,500, which is awesome.
Ooh,
so you're not limited to 20. Right. So if you're a big earner, you can save $45,000 a year into your employer account. So I like to bring this up too, because so many people are just like, oh, I need to get investing. Which account should I open, Lauren? Like, where do I go? Which company should I use? What stock should I pick? And it's like, are you taking advantage of the thing that's right already?
Yes.
Easily come out of your paycheck and you don't have to think about it. Like, set it and forget it.
Yes.
And then once you've maxed those out, then start worrying about some other accounts.
Totally. I love that. And I think that it's, I remember when I was starting out, my first job was as a nurse, and they did this whole benefits presentation. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I guess I'll start this thing. I think the main takeaway, at least from my personal experience, is like, just open an account and start contributing. Like, you have to set it up and you have to like elect to do it. It's not in like an automatic thing. And please take advantage. This is my advice as like a personal thing. Just like, please take advantage of that match program. Because basically, if you're not familiar with that, matching means that your employer automatically is going to give you whatever percent they say. My first job, I think, was 6%, which is amazing. And they say, like, as long as you contribute 6%, we will also contribute 6%. But if you only contribute 3%, then we'll contribute 3%. And then you have some companies that will automatically give you 3% or whatever percentage, no matter what. But it's just so important. It's so important to get it started because it really adds up over time. And like you said, the set it and forget it piece is like, yeah, I mean, we all have to think about what our top line thing is, like you said, of how much the take home is and how much we can handle being withdrawn from our accounts every month or every 2 weeks or whatever. But it's just, yeah, please, please take advantage if you can.
That was a great soapbox. I feel exactly the same way about it. It's like, don't
That's a big
leave
funny feels.
These- Yeah, don't leave these easy opportunities on the table. Sometimes we make it so complex that we get analysis paralysis and we do nothing. And then you wait 20 years and then you're like, hey, I got to get my finances together. And I'm like, holy crap, when I look at your stuff. And, you know, I generally don't say holy crap, but occasionally I do. I got to say, holy crap, we got to make some big changes because you haven't been able to do this over the course of 20 years or so, or, you know, whatever the time frame is. Just doing something. I talked to a young lady recently. She was like, I don't know. I just said it and I didn't do anything else. Like, I never saw it coming in. So I just did it. She wasn't planning for retirement. She didn't understand finances at all. $300,000 saved and she made $93,000 a year.
That's beautiful.
And was just single and was like, she was just like, I don't know. Like, it's fine. It was totally fine that she didn't know because she got the money in the account and it didn't harm her at all to just get it in there.
Totally. Totally. But I love that you also said about the investment accounts, because people do get really wrapped up in that of like, oh, I should be investing. And it's like, yeah, no, 401k is investing, pre-tax money. You have to leave it there if you don't want to be penalized. Right. But like, that is just such a golden opportunity there. And so would you say that like your kind of general guidance when you work with clients is that they maximize, if they have the money to maximize that, they maximize that, and then they consider doing an investment account after that?
Exactly. Like you said, if we're just trying to keep it easy peasy, you're not going to work with someone to find out what exactly is the most optimal thing for you.
Yeah.
Just start there, max it out. And then you're like, okay, I maxed that out. Move on to the Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. The Roth right now you can put $6,500 into. Okay, I've done that too. What else do I move on to? The brokerage account. And there's a lot of robo advisors now. So like Betterment is the one that I like a lot. Because it's like, what's your name? How much do you want to contribute? What do you want to use this money by? Like, you don't have to be a guru at all. It's like, connect your account here. And then you walk away and it's over. You're like, I'm investing money and I don't know anything about investing money. Mm-hmm. Whereas everybody gets, like you said, really worked up. Oh my gosh, should I be buying Tesla? Should I be buying, you know, airline stock? Should I be buying Tesla, you know, whatever, Apple stock? Like, you don't need to worry about that. Be awesome at what you're awesome at, but save your money into an investment account and know that it's being well diversified by the robots.
Yeah, it's fine. Totally. Totally. I love Betterment as a resource too. That's just a company website. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts. We had a specific question about people, I think applies to both, but there are some people who are taking jobs out there that are actually a 1099 employee instead of a W-2 employee. And there are people who have an employee salaried position at a private practice, for example, but they're not affiliated with like a government entity or a hospital-based system. And so they don't necessarily have the benefit offered of a 401k. And so that might be too many questions in one. People have a lot of questions I've seen about like, what does a 1099 employee mean? And I don't know if you can speak to that. If you can't, that's totally fine. But like, if you have somebody who's taking a 1099 job, like, what does that mean? But then also, how does one figure out a retirement plan if you're not a salaried employee or if your employer doesn't offer a 401k plan?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So 1099 is basically you are a contractor. You are doing some sort of contractor work and you're pretty much a small business. Mm-hmm. You immediately by doing this outside work that is not salaried, not tied to a specific company, you become a small business. So you don't need to set up a business account. You don't need to set up an LLC. You don't need to make a S election, you know, necessarily. That's something you might want to talk about with your accountant, mm-hmm. but you know, don't freak out and just assume that you desperately need those things, but you're going to get this thing in the mail that says, hey, you earned X number of dollars, and they didn't take any taxes out of it. Yep. So the big difference between 1099 and W-2 is that W-2 is going to say, hey, we're taking Social Security and FICA and all these other different things out of your paycheck, and your taxes is going to be partially paid, or maybe even paid in full, and you get a refund. Whereas 1099, they didn't take a penny out. So you needed to do some calculations to make sure that you have set aside money to pay Uncle Sam. So that, I like to say, all that money ain't yours.
Yeah. Is
the easy way to be thinking of it. And so because you're an independent contractor, you don't have that paycheck. You don't have that easy set it and forget it. Just pull it out. Like we were just talking about, that $22,500 can go in and it just comes right out of your paycheck. You never even see it coming home. You need to think about retirement for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so the accounts that are going to be available to you if you're a 1099 employee are the SEP IRA, the Simple IRA, or the Solo 401k. The Solo 401k is my favorite. The SEP IRA is the easiest to set up. And the Simple is like, it's somewhere in between.
Totally. I've had to learn about these a bunch because of the company, but I think I'm like hesitant to go down a rabbit hole with that because like, I think that one of the things that doesn't make me crazy, but I have a lot of concern for people is that we have brand new grads who are graduating from grad school are so desperate to get a job. And they're like, oh, they have this 1099 position. I'll just take it because I'll take whatever's available. And I guess like if you have any words of caution, I think I have an opinion here I'd like to share of like, tread cautiously, because that's a lot to take on as a brand new grad of learning how to do your job and then taking on the fact that you're a small business, which again, like you just named off three different options of a 401k, which like, I don't know. I mean, it's just, there's a lot more
involved.
We
didn't even talk about business expenses. You know, that's a whole thing, because you're a small business. You got to think about that. Where your W-2, there's no business expenses. You just show up to work every day. So.
Yeah, you show up to work, you get paid. Totally. So I think
business ownership comes with complexity, to your point, which is why, like you said, the financial planner that we know in common, like, works with business owners specifically. And I'm like, nope, no thanks. I work with W-2 people. Like,
it's complicated. It's so complicated. So that's for the 1099 people, is just like, tread cautiously. We're going to take that job. And really, I would absolutely, again, my opinion is that you get support for that, whether through a CFP, your accountant, things like that. But for people who are in like a private practice who are W-2, but they don't have a 401k option, what would you kind of say for those people? Out of luck.
I would say stinky.
I've never been in that situation. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's really tough because like, so you said, what happens with the private practice is that they're smaller businesses. So it really hurts their pocket to create the W-2 situation, create the 401k. There are rules around actually being able to contribute to a 401k if you set one up. So the owner's looking at it and is like, well, I want to save money for myself, but also like, I'm going to have to put money in for my employees. And it's a really big business expense. So I can see why it's painful for small business owners that don't want to set it up sometimes, but also it harms you as the employee not receiving any place. You don't have any place to put your income because your option then is a IRA or a Roth IRA. That's it. Mm-hmm. And the option there is $6,500 a year. So let's go back to my scenario. This person's been making 120 for the whole time that we've been chatting. You're bringing in 10K a month, you know, as a gross salary, and you're only able to save $6,500 for the year. Well, I told you, you need to save at least 20 grand in order to be on track for retirement. So now you do have to go think about like, okay, I did this traditional IRA. I also need a brokerage account and, you know, let me get some money saved over there. But you're also not getting any tax benefits. You're just getting a little bit. If you do the traditional IRA, you're getting no tax benefit if you do the Roth. And then you have this brokerage account that is going to be taxable. So it's actually going to send you a 1099 as well at the end of every year, which, like I said, yet another level of complexity.
Totally. Well, I guess I'm hoping that people are hearing, and again, not that everybody has to work with a certified financial planner, but I think money is just so much more complicated than we give it credit for. And at the same time, can be super empowering. Once you understand it, you have a plan, you have a support person to help you, or you have the resources of time and energy and all of that to like support yourself in it. And I guess I want to recap. So for people who it's so kind of like the first place to start is really looking at your take home pay. The next place is thinking about your debts and what is your debt plan? Do you have a plan? Do you have guidance? Do you have the resources or tools to investigate that further? And then, like, you know, making sure that you have goals and a vision for retirement and how you want to get there and like what are the tools and resources you need to get there. But I guess it's because I want to be mindful of our time. Like, are there other things that you want to share with people who are like similar to the clients that you work with, where they're these salary earners coming up with a plan and they're kind of on the fence about DIYing it versus working with somebody? Or maybe, I guess if we can speak to the people who are DIYing it, maybe, or I don't know, what are your thoughts about that? What kind of like other pearls of yeah. practice or wisdom do you want to share?
Yeah. So I would say the first piece of wisdom would be, if you're a DIYer, don't get your information from TikTok videos, Instagram reels. Yes. You know, those can be fun. They can cut a light bulb on for you. They can be cute. But to take those as Bible or take those as law can be really, really damaging. Because like I said, anything you see on social media is not one size fits all, even if it's good information.
Yeah.
And so you need to be thinking about what is specifically relevant to my particular situation. Everybody, like I said, should not be setting up an LLC to go save money on taxes. And that's, mm-hmm. That's one of the common things I see. Like,
yes, like, people say that. No. That was one of the questions that came in. Yeah, I was like, should I set up an LLC? Which you can't directly advise. Yes. But yeah, that's generally speaking. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just so valuable to get some education from somewhere that is reputable. So like I said, .gov website, so the IRS, studentaid.gov, if you're going to like DIY it. And then looking at places that have high integrity, like where are the, like who wrote this article? Did a CFP write it? Or did, Jane, who's a reporter, reply it?
Mm-hmm.
Write it. Are there tons of ads popping up while you're trying to read the article? Like they're trying to sell you something else. Like the article might just be something that is, poorly done. So you take on some risk by doing that research on your own, but you absolutely can. You just need to, like you said, look at high integrity things. What I would actually recommend for most of the world is to do something with a professional, even if it's on a short-term project basis. So
Absolutely. Let
somebody give you some unbiased advice about your situation. And then you can go off on your own and do it from there.
Absolutely.
So you don't need to work basis, but at least you heard from somebody like, hey, here's all the things I got going on. What do you think, Lauren? And I can tell you that. Now, whether you take my advice or not, or you're like, you smooth it a little bit left or right or do something else, but now you're at least aware of the things that you should be thinking about related to your particular situation. And then the third thing would be, of course, like you said, if you can afford it, if you know you have some complexity, hire somebody on an ongoing basis. So that's going to walk you through estate planning, because when you kick the bucket, what happens to your money? Insurance, like you said, protecting your family if something was to happen. That's life insurance, disability insurance, health insurance, car insurance, homeowners insurance. All of those things are looked at by a CFP. And then taxes, like you said, our job is not to do taxes. You go to an accountant for that, but the CFP is thinking about what are ways that you can be more tax efficient. And it's not those gimmicky, like I said, TikTok video kind of ways, a lot of people come like, all I want to do is be more tax efficient. Everybody thinks that there's some sort of magical wand that you can wave and you no longer have to pay taxes. Like that's not real life, so you want somebody who's going to keep it real with you and let you know, like, hey, here's how it actually works for your particular situation. And then, like I said, the foundation of everything for me is always going to be cash flow, budgeting, debt. Having a clear plan in place for that. And you can work with a financial coach that's not a CFP if you want. Like I said, I'm seeing more and more. I kind of consider myself, like you said, the person who's bridging the gap between coaching and financial planning.
Yeah.
Because maybe you just need to get your budget under control, get your debt under control. You're not ready for all those topics that I just talked about just yet. You can work with a financial coach in that particular situation. So looking for someone that is of high integrity, that has a track record, that is not, like I said, doing all this super gimmicky stuff that's telling you how they're going to help you make $1 million overnight is important. The way I've transitioned my business is to go one to many, because I realize that so many people are not like interested in the idea of like working one-on-one. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety. Start with this. Get four of your girlfriends together and let's do a weekend wherever you live. Like that's the kind of financial planning I'm doing now. Like, let's just talk about your finances.
Yeah.
Let's have some open, honest discussions about it with a professional in the room. And then you get to make the decision. So you leave feeling empowered to like, okay, I didn't know these 10 things.
Yeah.
Oh my God, let me hire someone to go deeper with this. Yeah. Or, oh my goodness, I didn't know these 10 things. Now I know them. Now I know where to go look and get, where the proper resources are to continue this journey on my own of empowering myself.
Oh, I love that so much. And I'm so happy to hear that your business does that for people of that like drop in, I just need this thing and that's it. Cause it's such a nice intro for people that are intimidated. And I just want to say that I'm like 100% on board of like people getting involved with a certified financial planner. But like, I know that there are the people who are like, I can do it myself. I'm going to DIY it. So it's been really invaluable for me to work with a CFP, not just with the business, but with my own personal stuff. So I want to be mindful of our time. Where can people find you if they want to learn more from you? They want to, yeah, like do all the things.
Yeah, really easy. My website is worth-winning.com. If you want to follow along on Instagram, like you said, I don't do very much there, but when I do it, it is of high integrity. It's not gimmicky foolishness that's going to guarantee you make $1 million. And like you said, what I'm really focused on right now is going into places where groups are welcome or where somebody wants group activity. So if you want to have me come to your workplace, you know, hit up your HR department or your ERG group and say like, hey, can you pray to bring this girl in? Because yes, I like her and we want to have some real money conversations. Like, that's an easy opportunity for you not to have money come out of your pocket, but to also have the information that you need being brought to not just you, but your grumpy coworker, as an example. Maybe your coworker is grumpy because they're living paycheck to paycheck. And both you and your coworker can benefit from like getting a half day workshop or a couple day workshop in. Or like I said, setting up a financial. So I'm going to host one in Columbia this year that you can sign up for, come over, do some vacationing and getting your finances together. Or you so can host exciting. One on your own. Like I said, get some of your girlfriends together, get a two or three other couples together. I'll come in, I'll set everything up for you, and we will talk all things money. So you'll leave with plan, but also kind of retreat. So I like to call them, you know, financial retreats or financial boot camps, depending on what kind of style you like. But yeah, there's opportunities and experience. Just go to worth-winning.com.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And I'm all set for my financial stuff with my people, but I just like, I would have loved to have that. I would have loved to have that before. But thank you so much. This is so fun. And I know that people are going to really appreciate it. So thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. I enjoyed being here today.
That's our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe, leave a review, and tell all your NP friends so together we can help as many nurse practitioners as possible give the best care to their patients. If you haven't gotten your copy of the Ultimate Resource Guide for the new NP, head over to realworldnp.com/guide. You'll get these episodes sent straight to your inbox every week with notes from me, patient stories, and extra bonuses I really just don't share anywhere else. Thank you so much again for listening. Take care and talk soon.